Okay, it's a pleasure to be here. I will talk about the baryogenesis from WIMPs. This is based on this work with Raman syndrome, where we laid out the general idea and include the embedding in natural SUSY. And also this more recent work of mine, which in some way can be seen as the embedding of the general idea in mini-split SUSY. So as we know, the CMB measurements show that this is a cosmic pie chart. The focus of this talk is about the two major stable components of matter in our universe, the baryon and dark matter, their abundances, and also this rather interesting coincidence or similarity between the two abundances. So let's start with dark matter. We know dark matter is stable and neutral and doesn't belong to standard model particle, so clearly point to some kind of new physics. On the other hand, the questions around the original masses, Higgs mechanism, Planck, weak hierarchy problem, may suggest that we should expect new physics at the weak scale. There's one paradigm of dark matter theory that's well motivated from both these two directions. This is the WIMP dark matter scenario. This is a rather popular and compelling story because there are well motivated candidates from existing theories and also experimentally detectable. For example, neutralino LSP in SUSY. Now let me briefly review a general key feature of WIMP dark matter, which is model independent. That is how its relic abundance is formed. So in the early universe, the WIMP dark matter is in thermal equilibrium with the standard model by this rapid annihilation. Then as the universe expands and cools, at some point, the annihilation rate falls below the Hubble rate, so the WIMP freezes out and its relic abundance is established. So a thermal WIMP chi freezes out around about 1/20th of its mass. And here is the prediction for its relic abundance, where the second line is the parameterization for a generic case where the annihilation proceeds through a S-channel mediator. As we can see that with weak scale mass and weak scale couplings, this result can readily fit the observed value of dark matter relic abundance. This is the so-called WIMP miracle. But here I want to emphasize one thing that will be relevant for the rest of the talk. Is the WIMP miracle is a remarkable quantitative success, but it is not a precise prediction. Rather, it actually points to a natural range, finite range, up to the coupling and mediator masses. For example, you can see from this power law dependence that up to order one change in the coupling and the mass, the prediction of the relic density can vary a few orders of magnitude. So let's now switch to baryons. The baryon abundance is an asymmetric abundance coming from baryon excess over anti-baryon. So although the baryons are very familiar to us, and it's actually what we are made of. But the mechanism for baryogenesis is actually rather intricate and puzzling. Usually, compared to the, in terms of model building, it's more trickier. It's trickier than the usual WIMP dark matter story. So first, we need to satisfy these necessary Sakharov conditions. CP violation, B violation, and out of equilibrium condition. Furthermore, there's this washout effect that needs to be suppressed. The washout effects are those persistent B violating interactions that can turn baryons back to anti-baryons during or even after the baryogenesis. It's a threat to the baryogenesis efficiency. And we have little clue about when and how the baryogenesis actually happens. There are various mechanisms out there which typically happen at above or around the weak scale. So just to recap that, we have seen that in these conventional mechanisms, the baryon and the dark matter abundances apparently come from separate mechanisms at separate scales. Now then it comes with sort of a little bit of surprising similarity between the two abundances. So, is this a mere coincidence, or maybe more interestingly, could suggest some deep connection between the two sectors? So this question has drawn more attention recently. And the paradigm that addresses this issue is in the name of asymmetric dark matter. In the ADM scenario, the dark matter is also asymmetric. And the comparability of these two abundances either can come from a cogenesis of dark and baryon asymmetry, or the asymmetry can be generated in one sector first and then transferred to another sector. So now let me summarize these existing paradigms with this scorecard. As we have shown that WIMP dark matter, conventional baryogenesis, and ADM, they are all very appealing mechanisms. However, we'll address one of these three phenomena, it cannot explain the other two. So this is somewhat unsatisfactory. So there's one intriguing question that has driven some of my recent work is whether there can be a unified paradigm that can address all of these three phenomena simultaneously. Just to clarify the notation, the check minus means that the theory prediction can be readily at the ballpark of the observation, but not a precise one. For example, the wind miracle. And check minus minus indicates that the theory prediction can fit the observed value, but there's no typical ballpark prediction, which is the case for most of the baryogenesis models. So we have our goal is modest in the sense that we just want to address all these three at the check minus level, just like how well the wind miracle dark matter theory does. And we're not aim at a precise prediction. That's why it's check minus. Meanwhile, of course, to address all these three is still somewhat a challenging goal. So the clue we find to realize this goal is to preserve wind miracle while address this connection in some natural way. A few attempts have been made, but only very recently, and all have some sensitivity to the model detail. This includes a work of mine with Brian here and Lisa Randall, where we propose a novel baryogenesis triggered by WIMP dark matter annihilation around freeze-out time. There we have some sensitivity to the washout rate. So in this talk, I will focus on talking about this new paradigm proposed in this work with Raman syndrome called baryogenesis from WIMPs. And this is an alternative mechanism with a more robust connection to WIMP miracle and less sensitivity to the model detail. We also checked various constraints to make sure the viability of the proposal. So in this preview, I want to emphasize that the proposal in this work should be seen as a novel baryogenesis at low scale that is even independent of its relation to dark matter. As I showed that although we started with a more ambitious goal to address this connection between dark matter and baryons, but even if the dark matter is not a WIMP, maybe it's axion, the proposal here stands with its own value as a novel baryogenesis mechanism. Furthermore, because this mechanism works at low scale, so that the related new physics signals can be accessible at LHC, et cetera. Also, this framework can be a remedy because some of the beyond the standard model physics actually calls for a low-scale baryogenesis. For example, as I'll show you later, that this is the case for the RPV natural SUSY. So now let me start with a general philosophy and principle. The WIMP type of new particles are ubiquitous in scenarios addressing the Planck weak hierarchy problem. The most familiar but actually special case is a stable WIMP as a dark matter candidate, this guy. There's actually a more generic possibility that there can be an array of WIMPs with diverse lifetimes depending on the symmetry protection and mass coupling hierarchy. There can be this stable WIMP, which can be dark matter. There can also be a metastable WIMP, which has a long lifetime. As I'll show you later, that it can play a role as a baryon parent. Of course, there can also be a WIMP that decays promptly. So now we want to pause and ask ourselves, Does nature mind such diversity complexity this long lifetime thing? The answer is no. We already seen examples from known physics. For example, the long lifetime of B quark and muons is rather natural because of much heavier mediator mass. And even in the standard model, the fermion-Yukawa couplings are rather hierarchical. It varies several orders of magnitude and can be rather small. So our basic ansatz is to assume a stable WIMP KDM as dark matter. And in addition, a metastable WIMP KB as baryon parent. This KB has a B violating and a CP violating decay after its thermal freeze out and triggers baryogenesis. To illustrate the idea, let me show you this cartoon of the cosmic evolution of the two types of WIMPs. In the early universe, both KDM and KB experienced this thermal freeze out. And then at the end of the thermal freeze out, this generalized WIMP miracle determines both the dark matter relic abundance and also this would be relic abundance of this KB particle. Suppose its lifetime is infinite. As the universe further expands and cools, at some point, this KB has an asymmetric decay to baryons and anti-baryons. And then, therefore, the produced baryon asymmetry inherits this WIMP miracle would-be relic abundance of its parent particle, KB. And on the other hand, the dark matter relic abundance stays the same. Then we can see that how this generalized WIMP miracle can make a prediction for both the dark matter and the baryon abundance. So the preview of our central results is that there's a generalized WIMP miracle that can determine both the dark matter relic abundance and the baryon asymmetry and the baryon abundance, and hence their connection and the similarity. So this result is robust since it's insensitive to the precise long lifetime of this KB particle. Nonetheless, there's a caveat that we need to make sure the washout processes are well suppressed. As I'll show you later, that is easy to realize. Meanwhile, notice that there's this extra factor depending on the CPA symmetry and the mass ratio in this prediction relative to the typical WIMP miracle prediction. For new physics relevant to baryogenesis, we can expect large CP violation at one loop level, which can give the asymmetry about 1 to 10%. Therefore, to get this observed baryon to dark matter ratio, the compensator from this would-be relic abundance of KB is like 100 to 1,000. However, this factor is easy to be accommodated by just using different masses and couplings associated with KDM and KB. Essentially, we need the KB to be a weaker WIMP. This is a rather easy and natural to realize in the framework, because recall that, as I said, the WIMP miracle itself is a rough guideline. Depends on the order one change in the coupling and the masses, the prediction can vary a few orders of magnitude. So next, I'm going to proceed to show you more technical detail about implementing this idea. And I'll first show you the general formulation, and then a minimal model, including the constraints and the viability discussion. And then I'll proceed to talk about embedding this idea in natural B-violating natural SUSY, and then embedding in the RPV mini-split SUSY. And finally, I'll show you some outlook. So general formulation. A thermal WIMP chi freezes out when its annihilation rate balances a Hubble rate. And here's the prediction for its thermal freeze-out temperature and the co-moving density at the end of the freeze-out. If the chi is stable, then its co-moving density at the end of the freeze-out is about equal to its co-moving density today. And here is the prediction for its energy relic abundance, which takes the familiar WIMP miracle form. Then, as previewed, we consider two species of WIMPs. One species is a stable WIMP as dark matter KDM. In this case, the prediction just follows from the normal WIMP miracle. And on the other hand, we also have a metastable WIMP that acts like the barren parent, which is this KB particle that has CP and B violating decay after its thermal freeze out. In this case, the KB co-moving density at the time of the thermal freeze out actually sets the initial condition for baryogenesis. So now let's talk about the detailed story of this baryogenesis from late decay of WIMP type B. So we assume a well-separated scales, that is the decay happens well after the thermal freeze out, but well before the BBN time. So that we can treat the freeze out and the baryogenesis as decoupled process and retain conventional success of BBN. And by solving Boltzmann equations, we find the co-moving baryon density today can be written in this neat formula. And in the desired case of a weak washout, we can drop off this exponential factor and get this very simple neat expression for the prediction of the baryon abundance, which is set by this WIMP miracle and some extra factor, as I mentioned earlier. So now we want to implement this general formalization into a concrete minimal model. I want to comment that this minimal model has some simple ingredients, but they are not ad hoc. And I'll show you later that it's very easy to embed this in a natural SUSY with RPV, which is a well-motivated scenario anyway. So we add to the standard model Lagrangian these B-violating terms with complex couplings, where this phi is a diquark scalar with the same gauge charges as the U-quark. And this chi and psi are the standard model singly Majorana fermions. The chi is just a switch notation as the chi B I mentioned before, which is the WIMP parent for baryon. And this psi, as I'll show you later, that is essential to get the interference loop that gives you the asymmetry. Also, there's this small parameter epsilon, which can come from approximate chi parity symmetry. And it is important to ensure a long lifetime of this chi, so decay to U phi. And in addition, we have this singly scalar S, which can mediate the WIMP annihilation of chi to the standard model. So you might want to ask how to incorporate the WIMP dark matter here. It's rather straightforward. We just need to add a chi DM singlet with analogous interactions to this chi B, except that we need an exact parity for the chi DM so that it's stable. Now, so the auto equilibrium decay of chi goes to phi u and then subsequently decay to UDD triggers baryogenesis. This decay violates baryon number and also can have a non-vanishing CPA symmetry from the interference between the tree level decay and this psi mediated loop diagrams. The computation for this epsilon CP is in close analogy to leptogenesis case. As we can see here, this small parameter associated with the chi essentially cancels, and the CPA symmetry is mostly determined by this Y coupling, which is this psi coupling to the U and phi. And therefore, to maximize the CPA symmetry, we need a hierarchical coupling between the chi and the psi, so that the epsilon is much smaller than Y, and the psi coupling should ideally be about order one. Now we want to move on to consider what are the possible constraints on this minimal model. How can we make it more realistic? So the first constraint is on the lifetime of the chi. Recall our basic ansatz is to have the decay well before the freeze out, but after BBN, but before BBN, but well after the freeze out. So this points to a wide range of this small parameter epsilon. assuming a TV scale and TV scale Chi-mass. So just to repeat this, this small coupling is not at odds, and we have seen examples from the standard model, and it can come from a approximate chi parity. And in the later example, I'll show you that there's actually an even nicer story in the split Suzy case. So next, there are a set of constraints that's related to this weak washout requirement. So let's consider the washout process in a timeline. Before QCD phase transition, the major washout process come from the inverse decay or scatters, or the scatterings of this of the quarks that violate the Baryon number. And these processes typically can have suppressed by a Boltzmann factor or a high power law. And then after QCD phase transition, before BBM, the important process we should consider is the NM-bar oscillation for approximately a free neutron. And then after BBM, we need to consider NM-bar oscillation in the medium with a bound state neutron. And there are also current day precision tests that can constrain this scenario. There are the NM-bar oscillation reactor experiments, the FCNC, and the neutron EDM. So we consider all these constraints in detail. I don't have time to talk about the specifics, but just to summarize the implications from these constraints. Assume all the fields have weak scale masses, we find the strongest constraints come from the precision tests, which tells that the new couplings involving the first two generation quarks needs to be suppressed. A simple natural solution to realize this is to have a third generation dominated pattern where the new fields mostly couple to a bottom and top quark, just like the Higgs, but with a CKM-like suppression to the light quarks. I hope I have shown you that our framework is a rather generic mechanism for the baryogenesis. Nonetheless, it's still intriguing and neater if we could embed this in the general idea in some existing well-motivated theories related to the hierarchy problem, for example, SUSY. So to give a brief review of the status of supersymmetry, the conventional low-scale SUSY is in tension with LHC data from Higgs mass and the exclusion on the supraponderal masses. However, the SUSY continued to be attractive for various reasons. It's a new space-time symmetry. It improved gauge coupling unification, solved the region hierarchy problem, and in the RP conserving case, we have the LSP WIMP dark matter candidate. And furthermore, after all this observed Higgs mass, is still tentatively close to the SUSY prediction. So there are two classes of currently favored SUSY models. The first path is to preserve naturalness. That is the natural SUSY where we have a light stop and a light third generation, and or R parity violating SUSY. Alternatively, we can give up full naturalness. Maybe the anthropic selection is at work to some extent. And this is the story of a mini-split SUSY, where the scalar masses can be much heavier than the Gugino or also the Higgsino mass. So here, although we give up naturalness, there are still attractions to this split SUSY idea, because it can be generically realized in, for example, anomaly mediation models, and can easily feed the observed Higgs mass, and can satisfy the flavor constraints in a generic way. So then we want to ask this question, whether can there be a natural incarnation of our paradigms in these viable SUSY models? In this preview, I want to briefly comment on one thing that usually when we talk about the interface between SUSY and cosmology, we think about the context of R parity conserving SUSY, and where we can get this LSP dark matter candidate. This is well known. On the other hand, nowadays people started to think more about the RPV SUSY. And as also we know well that the SUSY can provide a rich source of CP violation. And with these two conditions, together if we have a late decayed particle, we get all the three set of conditions that can do baryogenesis. So baryogenesis might be another possible way of the interface between the SUSY and the cosmology once we started to consider the RPV SUSY. So first, embedding in the natural SUSY, in fact, our minimal model provides a direct blueprint for this embedding. We just need to promote the singlet chi and s to chiral superfields and add to the MSSM superpotential and also those RPV bivalent term. We also assume the spectrum is in the natural SUSY pattern. So here's a mapping dictionary from the minimal model to the SUSY model. The dipark before maps to the light stop in the superfield T. The baryon parent chi is the fermion component of the singlet chi here. And the Majorana psi can be MSSM Gugino. And the singlet scalar S is the singlet scalar, the singlet S here, which can mix with the Higgs. And again, also we have this small parameter, epsilon, maps to the epsilon prime here. After talking about the minimal model in the natural SUSY context, I also want to comment that this embedding is actually a remedy because there's a potential cosmological crisis for this bivalent natural SUSY. So the story is there's an intriguing and less studied, less constrained regime of natural SUSY for collider search. It's a case that we have a light stop with a bivalating prompt decay. To have prompt decay at collider, we need this TDD coupling to be bigger than about 10 to the minus 7. On the other hand, if we think about the cosmology, assume there is a conventional baryogenesis happen above or even around the weak scale, so that we have a successful baryogenesis and give a primordial baryon asymmetry. This primordial baryon abundance can be effectively erased by a bivalating scattering. Assume we have this RPV coupling of the strength that can give a prompt decay at the collider. This limit doesn't seem too big, it's 10 to the minus 7. However, it's very efficient because, as you can see, it comes from this large exponential factor. So then our model embedded in the natural SUSY is a baryogenesis that can happen well below the weak scale when all the washout effects decouple. Therefore, it can serve as a robust cure to this problem. Then just briefly talk about, mention this phenomenology of this embedding natural SUSY. We can first produce this singlet Higgs, mostly singlet mixture, this S hat, has a Higgs-like single resonance production at the collider. And subsequently, this S hat decays to a pair of baryon parent, and then cascade down to TDD. So recall that the cosmological condition is that the chi must live beyond its cosmological freeze-out time. This tells us that at the collider, the decay length of this chi particle has to be typically longer than 1 centimeter. So it may leave a displaced vertex inside the collider. This is an intriguing and not well-covered search. And this is some work in progress with Brian here. We are trying to find out more detail. There's also an exciting further step, which could be more challenging, is to measure the CPA symmetry responsible for the baryogenesis from the charge asymmetry in the TD bar system here. So in the rest of the talk, I'm going to talk about this more recent work, which can be seen as embedding in the mini-split SUSY. So I have briefly discussed some of the conventional motivation for mini-split SUSY. In this preview, I want to mention that the result from this work is to demonstrate that the baryogenesis can work nicely within the minimal SUSY model, that is the MSSM, with a split spectrum and include RPV couplings. So Unlike most of the biogenesis models where we need to introduce some new singlet or some other ingredients from beyond the minimum model, in this case, just a minimal MSSM plus RPV and the split spectrum, everything can work out well. And also interestingly, the numerical results shows that there's a preference of sperm masses to be at a mini split scale, independent of any other conditions. So the result of this work can be seen as an independent motivation for mini split SUSY from a pure cosmological consideration. So let me first show you how the Sakharov conditions can be satisfied in this minimal framework. The first one is the out of equilibrium condition. Recall that in a natural SUSY model, we have this two-body late decay enabled by this small parameter we put in by hand. This small parameter is technically natural and can relate to some approximate chi parity. However, in natural in split SUSY case, we can have an even nicer story once we include RPV. There is the long lifetime of TV Gagino is rather natural. To be concrete, because of this split spectrum, where the scalar is much heavier than the Gagino, and also we have RPV, then the late decay is automatic. For example, this Gagino chi goes to UDD. It's a late decay because it's suppressed by a heavy mediator, and it's a three-body phase-based factor also. Then the other Sakharov conditions, the C, P, and the Baryon number violation can also be satisfied. Again, due to this scalar masses that up to 100 to 1,000 TeV, we can safely explore the large CP phase and the large RPV couplings, even with generic flavor pattern. In addition, for our general as mentioned in our general idea, we need this wind parent chi for baryons to have would be overabundance. A perfect candidate from MSSM is a Bino. Recall that in the scenario of R parity conserving case, the Bino is usually not a desirable dark matter candidate for the same reason that it has a large overabundance. But here, this would-be overabundance turn to a merit when we consider this baryogenesis story. So finally, there's a subtle condition called the Nanopoulos-Weinberg theorem for baryogenesis, which require that in addition to the tree-level B-violating decay, we also need to have additional independent B-violating source in the interference loop. In general, this can be satisfied if we have some other Majorana fermion in the model. Do we have other Majorana fermion in the MSSM? Yes, there's the Wino or Gluino. So we see that very interestingly, just the minimal MSSM plus RPV, and once we work with this with a split spectrum, it gives everything we need for baryogenesis. So now I hope I have shown you a good prospect of this Bino-triggered baryogenesis. And amusingly, you can remember it as a tilde B to delta B. So here is the relevant Lagrangian terms. And the sources of a CP violation that can be relevant for the baryogenesis include the Gagino masses, where we need at least two of them to have a physical phase. And then in the case of a large flavor violation, we can get additional source from fermion mass matrices. And this large flavor violation can actually be allowed in a split SUSY case. So now let's look at a very important calculation that is about the CPA symmetry in the Bino decay. As discussed, the Nanopoulos-Weinberg theorem and the CP violation requires Marana, we know her green node to appear in the loop diagrams that interfere with the tree level B node decay. And to allow the kinematic cut, either we know or green node needs to be lighter than the B node, which I'll show you in more detail later. And then we can consider the color charge and the chirality of the couplings. The we know can only couple to the lepton violating operators LE and LQD. And the green node only couples to LQD or UDD. So in the following, I'll do detailed calculation for two example models. The first one is a direct baryogenesis with a light green node and a UDD operator. And this case tends to maximize the asymmetry. And the next example is a leptogenesis with a light green node and an LQD operator. And this spectrum is more well motivated from, for example, anomaly mediation Suzy breaking. So let's start with the first model, baryogenesis with a light Boolean. The tree level B violating decay is this shown here with the reeds. And all, at the same time, there is a B conserving decay channel which can be competing, which is the B to a DD bar and Boolean. So as we can see from here that to have the B violating decay dominant or comparable to the competing one, we need this RPV coupling to be bigger or around the point, order 0.1. Such large RPV coupling is viable for with generic flavor structure once we work in this split Suzy scenario. Now, next, let's think about the interference loops that interfere with the tree level decay to give the asymmetry. To show the subtlety here, we have three candidate diagrams at lowest order that can interfere. The first one turned out to give you a zero asymmetry after you sum over all the flavors. And the second one has a non-vanishing CPA symmetry only with a large flavor violation. And this third one, where the vertex correction is directly connected to the B-node line, can give you a CPA symmetry regardless of a flavor violation. And it's suppressed by this M0, the scalar mass. In analogy, we have a similar story for the leptogenesis with the light we know. Here's the tree level decay that violates lepton number, which is the essential one for leptogenesis. Meanwhile, we have these two L-conserving decay channel. Notice that there is this new one, which includes a hexenal mediator. And here, do have the lepton number violating decay to dominant or comparable to these competing ones. We need, again, need the RPV coupling to be large. And also, we need a mu term to be larger than the scalar mass. Just to comment on this large mu term thing here, although usually we are we like to talk more talk about the smaller mu terms at weak scale, for example, to have a nicer story for the Wim dark matter case in the RPV conserving scenario. Nonetheless, this recall that the mu term is a supersymmetric mass parameter, and in general, it can be very different from both M0 and Gaginal mass. So this also the large mu term is exempt from the task of solving the so-called mu term problem, and it's innocuous for phenomenology as recently considered. So again, in analogy to the baryogenesis case, we have these interference loops where the first one gives you the asymmetry regardless of flavor violation, and the second one can give you a CPA symmetry. Where there is a large flavor violation. Our final goal is to compute the baryon asymmetry. Recall the general prediction for baryon asymmetry in our paradigm is determined by first this epsilon CP, which we just worked out. And then in addition, there's this would-be Wimp relic abundance of this of the decayed particle. Here is the B node. So to calculate this would-be relic abundance of B node, we need to look at the thermal annihilation rate of the Beano. The leading process of Beano annihilation with a small or moderate mu is this pair annihilation to the pair of peaks. And the cross section is set by the 1 over mu squared. So we combine the formula, we get the expression of the CPA symmetry and this cross section here. We can roughly parameterize the Baryon asymmetry in this formula, where we can see that to get the sizable Baryon asymmetry as we observed today, we will need this mu term to be larger than about 10 times of the M0, which actually goes into the same direction as we commented later that we need to suppress the lepton number conserving decay channel in the leptogenesis case. There are also other processes which can dominate when the mu goes to really large and decoupled. These are mediated by the these fermion mediators, and is also suppressed by the fermion masses. So now we want to put everything together and include the cosmological constraints on the observed Baryon asymmetry, the lifetime, and the washout, etc. And present some numerical results for some benchmark examples. As you can see, here are two examples, one for baryogenesis and one for leptogenesis. This x-axis is M0, the scalar mass, and the y-axis is the mu term. The sign band gives the observed Baryon asymmetry. The yellow region is excluded by a strong washout, and the pink region is excluded since there the decay happens before the freeze out. And this brown region for the leptogenesis is when the decay happens after the Spallaron process already turned off. That is the time when the electroweak phase transition happens. So eventually, the viable region is this sign band here. So as we can see that eventually the allowed region happens to lie around, the scalar mass happens to lie around 100 to 1,000 TeV scale. So remember that we get to this scale just purely from the cosmological conditions. So this is a very interesting result, and we want to think a bit more about it. So as have been discussed in existing literature, the minimum split scenario, the loss of full naturalness there might come from a compromise of the naturalness principle and anthropic environmental selection. So the results from this work, considering that the baryogenesis is a rather important phenomenon for our universe, this interesting result here may be seen as an example of this interpretation. So then, just to briefly discuss the phenomenology of this embedding in mini-split smoothing. The constraints, we consider the constraints from low-energy experiments, and it's easy to understand that because here, once we work in the mini-split regime, these constraints are easy to satisfy and may be approachable for in a near future experiment. And also at the colliders, we can search for a long-lived Beano, Guino, Guino, and here it's such search would be would come with a strong cosmological motivation. In particular, we can look for displaced vertex, the CPA symmetry measurement, and maybe there's better reach for this multi-TeV Baryon parent at a high energy upgrade, such as a 30 or 100 TeV collider. So this phenomenology part is again work in progress with Brian here. So now let's come to the conclusions. So our simple robust mechanism realized this challenging original goal of addressing all these three phenomena. And the mechanism proposed here is a unique low-scale baryogenesis mechanism, even independent of dark matter story. And where the wind miracle can predict the right ballpark of the baryon symmetry. And we also we consider the natural embedding of the idea in B-violating natural SUSY, which can also serve as a remedy to the potential cosmological problem there. And we also we finally consider this embedding in the RPV split SUSY, where we see that the baryogenesis naturally works with a minimal model and independently motivate the mini split scale. Finally, the outlook. So as we know, the connection between possible connection between new particle physics related to the electroweak hierarchy problem and new cosmology has always been a very appealing direction to explore, because it's related, it relates to a well-motivated theories and also can be searched for at LHC and some low-energy experiments. The conventional focus has been focused on the wind miracle dark matter, where the example can be easily found in the RP conserving SUSY. The recent work I present here might provide a different, a new perspective of this possible connection based on this idea of baryogenesis from metastable wind decay. Whereas I have shown you that it's rather easy to find examples of this idea in R parity violating SUSY. So this new perspective can offer an exciting possibility for discovery as well. We may be able to test the cosmological origin of matter, which is a very important, one of the most important questions at the cosmology frontier, at the energy frontier, current day colliders such as LHC, and also intensity frontier such as improved low energy experiments. And finally, let me end my talk by showing you this interesting picture, which shows that this multi-pronged search might lead to great discoveries. Okay, thank you.